And now,
you are listening live.
Handoff, Kennedy McCoy cuts it back inside. He's at five, heading to the end zone. He's in, touchdown! Drops, throws, has a man. Ball caught Jennings. Gary Jennings breaks the tackle. 30, 25, 20, 15, 10, 5, end zone. Touchdown, Gary Jennings! And it is a great night to be a Mountaineer, wherever you may be.
Bye, Godders. Welcome to another episode of the Smoking Musket Podcast. Recording from outside the heart of college football, I am Bart Keeler. And I am joined by the site manager of www.smokingmusket.com, Mike Miller. It's week 10 of the college football season, but more importantly, it's Riot Bowl week. How excited are you, Mike?
I don't know if I'd say I'm excited. Like I'm just very indifferent about this whole season for some reason.
It feels like Thanksgiving Day, and like you have three Thanksgivings you have to go to because you have to go to your parents, you have to go to, you know, your spouse's parents, and you have to go to like a grandparent's house, right? And it's like, I guess we have to do it.
That's a really good description there. That's about right.
You're like, I don't really want to, but I know there is stuff that you know, one of them will have your favorite green bean casserole. And you're like, well, you know, I like green bean casserole, so I might as well go. And that's it. Nothing else about it is going to be enjoyable. And I feel like that's been the West Virginia football season. We like West Virginia football. We enjoy watching it for the most part. But really, is it good for your health? And do you really want to go to everything? So basically, we're all sadists and masochists here on the Smoking Musket. And we enjoy making ourselves feel pain. That's just how it works. Anyway, welcome to the Smoking Musket Podcast. We do this every week. You can listen to us on iTunes, Stitcher Radio, TuneIn Radio. All you have to do is search for the Smoking Musket Podcast. Hit subscribe while you're there so you can get all of our podcasts as they get released. You can also go to www.blogtalkradio.com/smokingmusket, and we put everything up there as well. You may have seen me on Facebook Live on Monday. We tried that out. We tried the live call-in show, and no one really called in. So we're doing this instead. Facebook Live video every Monday to review the game that happened over the weekend. You get to look at my pretty face, which is the best part of it, I think, for you all. And, yeah, so just make sure you like the Smoking Musket on Facebook. And follow at Smoking Musket on Twitter, and you can get all of our updates and everything, and you'll get notifications when we go live. Great. Mike, first question I have for you has nothing to do with really football at all, but are you already decorating for Christmas?
No. I take a hardline stance on no Christmas decorations until, like, the day after Thanksgiving or Thanksgiving Day. You can put it up, like, that evening or something.
Sure. Sure. If you get done with Thanksgiving dinner and you're all cleaned up, you're like, all right, okay, we'll bring up the Christmas. Sure.
Yeah, fine. I'll break out the Christmas tree and want to kill myself putting it together. But, yeah, let's do it.
I mean, you could sleep. That would be a better use of your Thanksgiving evening. But, you know, or go shopping for Christmas. Because, see, Thanksgiving, as soon as you get done with that turkey, take your nap and wake up and watch the Lions lose on Thanksgiving Day, that Christmas is here.
That's about right, yeah.
This is how it works. Christmas does not start after Halloween. Just stop.
I have a real big problem with, like, I walked into Walmart, like, 2 weeks ago, and Christmas trees were up. I was like, what is going on?
Right. I mean, I was in, we have, like, I don't know, do they have these near you? They're called, like, Ollie's Bargain Stores.
Yes, there is one in Beckley.
Okay.
Yes.
Okay, so, they already have Christmas stuff up. But, like, at least they still had Halloween and, like, fall decorations, but when I went in last week to like get my final supplies for my Halloween costume, they already had like Christmas. They were blowing up the inflatable like yard ornament things, which are both hilarious and terrible at the same time. And I was like, yo, like, there's an entire holiday dedicated to food coming up. Like, why can't we celebrate this?
It gets, like, earlier every year. Like, next year, it's really going to be, like, Christmas in July. And from there on, trees are going to be up. And
absolutely. I get it. You're going to put out holiday decorations, like ornaments and stuff like that. That's cool, whatever. But, like, yeah, Christmas trees. Stop. Oh, well.
I'm officially on the war on Christmas, at least until Thanksgiving.
Yes. Now, no one's going to listen to our podcast because I think we're all liberal hippies who love Bernie Sanders. Congratulations. You just ruined it. Did you have a good Halloween, though? Did you get a good parent tax from the candy?
Yes. Yeah, we got two big buckets of candy. Usually, like, the last couple of years, we've done, like, a family theme costume thing. This year, my six-year-old decided she didn't want to be part of it, so she was Evie from The Descendants, and we dyed her hair blue. Because, we bought a wig for, like, $25, and she was all for it. A blue wig, the official blue wig for Evie.
Yeah.
And the day before Halloween, she decides that she doesn't like the wig. So I'm, like, searching around on Halloween Day looking for, like, the blue hairspray stuff. And I found two cans. And that was, like, the only cans in this area.
Legit.
So, yeah, she had blue hair at school and stuff. It was wild.
That's being a good dad over there, everybody right there. That's how you do it.
And then my one-year-old was Wonder Woman, and I dressed up as Clark
that's
Kent,
great.
So it was kind of cute.
Oh, that's good. That's wonderful. I was a Coachella fuckboy, so that was what I did for Halloween.
I miss
everyone thought I was a hippie.
I miss having good costumes, like, in college and stuff, but I kind of like doing the whole theme thing with my kids. So I guess
I've
grown up some.
Look, but when I, like, finally do that, maybe never, if ever, whatever. But, like, why not? Parents, it's totally cool for you to dress up with your children. Like, this is still a holiday. You're allowed to celebrate it. It's not just for kids. Stop. Have fun with it. Take candy from your children. This is what it's all about. This is America. Don't do Donald Trump Jr. taking candy from your children, but, you know. All right, now that we've lost all of our listeners, let's actually kind of maybe talk about something here that involves WVU sports. Mike, I don't know if you noticed, because I think we were all kind of sad and frustrated, but we had two basketball games over the weekend. So we're going to talk about that in our headlines and some West Virginia women's soccer. So while we're at it, let's throw you some WVU sports headlines. The WVU men's and women's basketball team started their 2017-2018 seasons with exhibitions over the weekend. On Saturday, the men defeated Albany 98-67 in the WVU Coliseum, and the ladies downed West Virginia Wesleyan 113-54 on Sunday. So good starts for the Mountaineer basketball programs. Both teams entered the 2017-2018 season ranked in the preseason top 25. Really good for the women's team. They were ranked number 13 in the preseason poll. They are joined by Texas, Baylor, and OU as other Big 12 teams in the top 25 preseason rankings. On the men's side, West Virginia was ranked number 11 in the AP poll. They were joined by Kansas at number 4 and Baylor at number 24 as three teams representing the Big 12 in the top 25. A little bit down this year for the Big 12, but I do expect we'll have some middle-of-the-pack teams rise up into the top 25 as the season goes on. In Kansas City, Kansas, the WVU women's soccer team defeated Texas Tech 3-1 in the first round of the Big 12 Soccer Championship on Wednesday in Kansas City at Swope Park Soccer Village. I think that's what it's called. Swope Soccer Village, Swope Park Soccer Village. One of those two. That's where they play it. Next, West Virginia will take on TCU on Friday at 8 p.m. Eastern. If you go on the Big12Sports.com website, they have the Big 12 Digital Network. You can watch all the games there. Just a reminder, all their times are listed in weird central time, not normal Eastern time, so just be aware of that. On the men's side, West Virginia travels to Southern Illinois, Edwardsville, on Saturday, November 4th, for the final regular season match of the men's soccer season. Currently, the Mountaineers are fifth in the MAC with an 0-2-2 record and are 8-5-4 overall. Mountaineers are in danger of not making the conference tournament. Only four teams make it for the second year in a row. So Marlon LeBlanc and company to win and also get some help on Saturday. WVU volleyball traveled to Oklahoma to take on the Sooners this Saturday at 8 p.m. The Mountaineers are 3-7 in the conference and 15-9 overall, surprisingly sitting at like 6th in the conference with that record. So decent season for the WVU Mountaineers volleyball team. And lastly, the WVU Kansas State game on Saturday, November 11th in Manhattan has been scheduled for a 3:30 kick. It'll be on one of the ESPN networks. Might be ABC, might be ESPN, might be ESPNU, might be ESPN2. We don't know. We don't know. They haven't decided yet. That is how ESPN operates. That's all the sports headlines we have right now. Mike, did I miss anything?
I don't think so. We did get a really big commit this week. And I think we're in like a good position for a couple more like four-star and close to four-star commits. So Dana's kind of trying to build a monster, I think, in this recruiting class.
This could be one of our better recruiting classes. Quantel Reigns, I think I got his first name right.
Yeah.
Kind of like the heir apparent to Kaiser White. He likes to wear his commitment photo was him at number 8. That's all I'm saying. That made me happy. Alex Whipple product. So hopefully, and I think you mentioned it. There's another Alex Whipple student athlete. Do not tweet student athletes. Who was talking, he said after Reigns committed that he was excited and hopefully wanted to join him at WVU. And I think he's like a 3 or 4 star as well. So
yeah, he's a class of 2019. Will Gibson, I think is his name. And there's another kid, up there that goes to the same school that I think is kind of leaning towards WVU right now. So we may have opened up a pipeline.
Yep. And that would be good. I mean, the Pittsburgh and the Western PA area, pretty good for football. Pitt has struggled to get those good recruits. Penn State's been doing it. So if we can sneak in there and grab some recruits every now and then, I think that would be solid. But I mean, look, this recruiting class, everyone has talked about recruiting and how we need to recruit better. I mean, do you really think this could be the start of something?
I think so. I think last year was kind of just – it was a bad example because we had the whole, you know, the contract situation with Dana. But the past couple of years before that, I mean, his classes were decent. I mean, last year was the worst ranked class.
Yes. And I think there was a lot of talent in that class. We've gotten talented players. Yes, we have got a lot of transfers, which is fine. That's what Kansas State does. And honestly, I think it shows that Dana – is a well-respected coach, especially for some of the offensive talent we've received. You look at quarterbacks and wide receivers. I mean, I don't know. In my opinion, it just shows that people look at him and say, oh, he's building a good program. High school kids, I got to say, look, this isn't going to be the most popular opinion, but West Virginia as a school and a state aren't number one on their list. That's just what it is, right? We've always had to battle this. We've always had to battle this.
Right.
And when your home state isn't producing the best talent, I mean, let's be honest, West Virginia high school football could step up the game. You got to go elsewhere. And it's hard to recruit against teams in Texas, teams in Pennsylvania, teams in Florida and other places. That's just the fact of the matter. And I don't know. I mean, I'm not going to say, oh, this is the turning point, but I think you're right that this is one of those things where if you get a couple guys from an area, hopefully 5-10 years in a row, you can continue to get guys from that area.
Well, I also think it helps. You get a couple 4-star guys, they're going to bring in more 4-star kids because those kids want to play together. We're already seeing that because, I mean, Dante Stills, he's so active in, like, recruiting other kids to come to WVU with him.
Yes, he is.
Well,
yeah. I mean, and they have friends. Like, this is the thing. As much as you think, oh, he went to this high school. Well, if they're from a decent metro area, they know most of the high school kids in their area. That's how it works.
Yeah, I mean, a lot of the higher rated kids, they go to the regional camps and stuff, so they meet these kids there and they become friends with them. And I mean,
they follow each other on Twitter and Instagram and all this shit.
It's not a coincidence that we have two or three 4-star kids right now. And we're in on another one, I think, from Georgia that was, last I heard, was a WVU lean between us and Auburn and LSU, I think. And he was leaning towards us, which is kind of really cool.
I mean, look, LSU and Auburn.
If we're beating LSU and Auburn for kids from Georgia,
yeah,
I will take that every year. Like, that's amazing.
Well, I mean, I think this is going to be, hopefully this is going to be a better recruiting year for Dana. I think a lot of people got scared because they saw the whole, like, oh, Kansas out-recruited us. Well, we see how that's going.
Yeah.
So, Kansas, don't get me wrong, like, David Beatty has recruited well at Kansas, but, like, you can't tell me that their team is so much better. Yes, it is good to recruit better and start off with a higher plane of talent, but at some point, you have to develop guys and you have to put together a good team. And for Dana's credit, he's done a decent enough job for that. It could be better. I'm not going to tell you that it's great, but it could be better. But, you know, it's been fine so far, in my opinion. I don't know. That's just me.
Yeah, I think he's doing all right.
All right. So speaking of recruiting, let's turn our attention to this Iowa State team. And I mean, before we get too much into the game preview, you got to give credit to Matt Campbell for just the program he's built in his, what, three short years there? Two short, three. What about Matt Campbell has made him successful at Iowa State, do you think?
I don't know. Like, he just seems to have it. Like, he did really well at Toledo.
Yeah.
I didn't know if he would just kind of fall into the same trap as a lot of other coaches, and when they get, you know, a bigger job, they just kind of get exposed. But he seems
like a
legit coach. I mean, he's got Iowa State ranked like number 15 or 14.
Yeah.
Like, that's not easy. So, he's good. I will give him that. I don't know if he's going to stick around.
He is.
I gotta be honest.
If I'm Tennessee, I'm calling Matt Campbell.
They're going to call Gruden or Kiffin, or they're going to try, like, just something stupid. Just like Florida's going to try to get another Saban assistant that's going to flame out.
Okay. We're going to talk about this, because I've been talking about this all week with my SEC friends. Y'all, Tennessee is not a destination job anymore. You saw how they treated Butch Jones with his – I mean, he did not have – this is his first bad – legitimately bad season. I get it. But you know why this is a bad season? Because y'all gave him all this crap and put all this pressure and everything on them that people literally left, okay? You anointed them SEC East champions for the past 17 years. Butch has only been there for 5. And somehow you think this team is going to win every year. Look, Tennessee is not the job that people think it is anymore. That's what I'm saying. Matt Campbell could go there because they have the money. It's a high enough job where Matt Campbell, a guy like Matt Campbell, would go there. I don't think that they want a Power 5 assistant or a Group of 5 head coach who's kind of good. Clearly, they tried that with Butch, and that didn't work. But stop making this out to be like this is some destination job. If you think Gruden is leaving his plush mega million-dollar contract with ESPN to literally just talk about football, he doesn't have to coach. There's no pressure on him. He gets to do Corona Light commercials, and all he has to do is talk about football every day of the week. Are you kidding me? That's the best job for that man.
Like,
why would he leave it for Tennessee?
I saw something ridiculous the other day. I think it might have been on SB Nation, like under the rumors thing. But like somebody said, Tennessee is ready to offer him like $10 million a year. That is
cool. Have fun with that.
That is so dumb. Like,
yeah, a guy who hasn't coached college football in more than 20 years.
Why? I don't know.
Because they're Tennessee, and they think that because they're in the SEC, they're great. Now, Florida, on the other hand, I think, is a prime situation for a younger coach at a good school to go to, okay? I think their best target should be Dan Mullen, but I don't know if he'll leave Mississippi State, to be that honest. I think he should, but I don't think he will right now. But Florida is a much better job landing than Tennessee. Look, Florida has a direct pipeline to one of the best recruited states in the country, right? Florida produces talent like no other state can at all positions, right? Texas and California do produce talent, but Florida produces talent at every single position. Offensive, defensive line, defensive backs, linebackers, quarterbacks, wide receivers, running backs, every position Florida produces. Also, Florida is like a relevant school now. Okay, I'm not saying they're like this historically great school, but like people still think of Florida as a good program. And they went to the SEC championship game 2 years in a row. So clearly the standards were, hey, make it to the SEC championship game and don't have 20 kids arrested for criminal charges. If you can do that, that's pretty good. Like, if I'm a coach, I can say, well, I can do that. I can recruit well and make sure kids don't get locked up.
I have a bad feeling that Florida's just going to fall into the same trap they always do.
They're going to hire a Saban assistant.
Yeah, I don't know which one, but they're going to pick somebody. It's, I don't know.
I think this is what I think is going to happen. I think, and this is because I'm a Falcons fan and want him gone, but I think Steve Sarkisian is going to get a call from one of these two schools.
Oh, why?
And I think, well, look, he can go to Tennessee and be drunk and no one will know the difference, so it'll be great for him. I don't know. I feel like Sark might go to Tennessee, and I think that's kind of the same guy. Like, clearly they want someone who has name recognition because I think that helps with recruiting. So good for them. I don't know. But anyway, I mean, I think Matt Campbell has something that he has it. I can't put my finger on it. He's recruited fairly well. He had the balls / had to make a change of quarterback this year, but it's worked out. Something's going well for the guy. He seems to be likable enough too.
Yeah, his players seem to love him.
Yeah.
I want to know if it's going to be something, if it's just kind of he lucked into the way the season's gone, or if he's actually like a legit good coach. Because I mean, he was good at
can
Toledo.
Can he be both?
He can.
Can he be both? Because I think he clearly is a decent coach. He's maybe a good coach, okay? But like Iowa State they've gotten a little bit lucky this year, okay? Clearly Jacob Park having to leave or whatever his actual story is helped the Cyclones out because they weren't a great team while Park was their quarterback. Now they have Kyle Kemp as their quarterback and they've won 4 in a row. So maybe it's a new change. Maybe it's a new leader, whatever it is, something has turned on for them. I'm not saying it's not Matt Campbell. I'm not saying it is Matt Campbell, but he has put together a team that has been able to take advantage of their opportunities. Also, let's be real honest. They got lucky that TCU did not beat them. And I don't mean that in any slight at Iowa State, but TCU, by all measures, should have beaten Iowa State. You go back and watch that game and tell me how Iowa State beat TCU. It's because they forced turnovers. Yes. There's no excuse for TCU to be throwing that many interceptions, fumbling the ball like that. I mean, they turned the ball over like 2 or 3 times inside the 5. If one of those turns into a touchdown, it's a different game. So I think it's both he's good and they've gotten really lucky this season, but that's just me. So we've talked about Matt Campbell. We could talk about more, but let's actually talk about this game a little bit. The Cyclones have surprised the nation and they have defeated Oklahoma and TCU on the way to a 6-2 record and a number 15 ranking. I mean, that's pretty good. However, they do have losses to Texas and Iowa. So there is some bad in this season as well. But since the loss to Texas, the Clones are on a 4-game winning streak, and that's in part due, like we said, to Kyle Kemp taking over at quarterback, or maybe taking over because Jacob Park was secretly not that great of a quarterback and a head case. Just possibly that. But that's not the only thing that has sparked this turnaround. Mike, defensively, how has Iowa State been able to win these 4 games in a row?
They're just playing as a complete team right now. I mean, if you look at some of the stats, they're like in the top 1 and 2 of the Big 12 and really in the top 20 in the country. Like fumbles lost, they've lost 0 fumbles on offense.
That's
number 1 in the country. They have the fewest penalties, 31 penalties.
Yep.
So that's 5 in the country, number 1 in the Big 12. They have a plus 10 turnover margin, so they're getting the ball. They're getting opportunities there. That's, 8th in the country, number 1 in the Big 12. On offense, they're converting fourth downs at 72.7%, which is kind of crazy. That's 2nd in the Big 12. I'm not sure who's first. They've only lost 7 turnovers, which is 1st in the Big 12. They have 7.5 tackles for loss per game. but David Long kind of had that last
week.
Yeah,
well, you know.
And their scoring defense, they're allowing 18.8 points per game.
Yep.
That is nuts in the Big 12.
And yeah, in the Big 12. I mean, granted, they played some not great teams, but in the Big 12, they've been keeping teams to a decent, you know, not they haven't allowed too many points. They gave up 7 to TCU. They held a Texas Tech to 13. They blanked Kansas. And Oklahoma only got 31 on them. I know that seems like a lot, but, you know, it's not. And Texas scored 17. I mean, if Iowa State had a semblance of an offense at that point, they would have beaten Texas. So, you know, it's been a little bit of luck, I think, because, like you said, all those turnover statistics, I'm not saying that they haven't done a good job of turning the ball over. That's not what I'm saying, and I'm not here to crap on that statistic of Iowa State. But turnovers are hella lucky, right? Like, I watched my Falcons play at the Jets last week. Matt Ryan fumbled a snap 3 times and lost 2 of them. Like, how the hell does that happen, right? So some of these things, you know, fumbles, not losing a fumble on offense, this is just about bounces going your way. And we've said this a little bit. Iowa State reminds me a lot of what West Virginia did last year. Now, granted, I think they're playing at a higher level than what we thought they would be. I don't think they're clearly they're not beating teams that they shouldn't or anything like that, or they should and all this stuff. But a little bit of what they're doing reminds me of our season last year. We didn't turn the ball over a whole lot. We got a little lucky when we needed it. Defense played pretty well. How do you beat a team that's just riding a wave of momentum?
I don't know. I guess you got to get some breaks going your way. You got to get the ball to bounce your way a couple times.
Yep.
Because
momentum
kind of
started it last. Yeah, and we talked about the Oklahoma State game on the Facebook Live video, but Mike, I mean, you and I both, I think, are in agreement. It's not like our defense played poorly. Our offense sucked because we turned the ball over 5 times, right? But, like, our defense wasn't it wasn't 50 points bad, was it?
No. No, and that's what – that drove me crazy Saturday because everybody – I wrote, like, my headline on the recap was that the offense couldn't get going.
No, it couldn't.
And, like, a bunch of people were like, well, it sounds like it was the defense. You allowed 50 points. No. That's not how it worked.
When your offense turns the ball over 5 times and they score, and like, yes, they scored off of like every turnover we gave them, but that's not always on the defense. Like, Oklahoma State is a very good offense. Your defense did the job, got them off the field by either a fumble or a punt, and then you just gave it right back to them. And a lot of that was Will Greer.
He had the worst game I've seen from him. Like, even going back to Florida days, like,
yeah,
bad.
Oh, that was definitely his worst game of his college career.
Yeah,
absolutely.
Which kind of works out because that might be what saves him and lets him come back next year.
Right. Yeah. Everyone asked, you know, is Greer saying, "Well, we don't know. We don't know because, believe it or not, we're not Dana Holgerson and we don't talk to these players on a daily basis or know anything." But I will say that his father seems to think that he'll stay for another year, and honestly, I think he should. You know, I don't think there's a reason for him to want to get out early. Why not stay another year and really be the best quarterback he can be? That's just my opinion.
I don't think he's in the same situation we've seen some of the other players. Like, Devin Williams left early because, you know, he said he wanted to make money and support his family. I don't think...
No, that's not his problem.
Will doesn't have those problems. Like, he seems...
No, that's what Hayes and Nash are for.
Yeah. He seems to have his family life down, you know, pretty well.
Yeah.
We follow his wife on Instagram and stuff, she's like teaching dance classes in Morgantown now. So,
yeah,
I mean they've settled in,
okay.
I think. So, I don't think him leaving this year is like a necessity for him. So,
he's going to get paid regardless,
right?
So, I mean, that's the way I look at it. Is that he's going to get paid regardless. If he leaves this year, sure, he's going to make a lot of money. If he leaves next year, granted, the rookie salary is what it is, but he might be a better quarterback. Might find himself in a better situation, or might be able to you know, resurrect the team, not the Browns, because that's not possible. But, you know, he might be the piece that someone is looking for.
Can we talk about the Browns and how terrible they are? Did you see what they did with their trade thing?
I have two thoughts on this. One, why the hell you signed AJ McCarron? Like, how was he the answer to your problems? How? Like, how is that the guy that's going to somehow solve your offensive woes? Two, what? You couldn't take care of paperwork.
Like, how are you going to celebrate that much for AJ McCarron and forget to turn in paperwork?
But, look, okay, this is the juxtaposition, okay? We saw last night the Houston Astros win a World Series, and they made a deal to get Justin Verlander, one of their top pitchers this season, and a decent postseason performance for them, literally seconds before the midnight trade deadline in the MLB. So there is the difference between a competently run sports franchise and one that I don't care what players or coach you put out there, they will suck because they can't get their shit together.
Like, the best the Browns have ever looked was in draft day.
Yeah. Yeah. And that was, I mean, it's all make-believe. And I feel bad because I think that they have players. They have a defense that's not absolutely terrible. They're playing in a division that, sorry, Pittsburgh Steelers fans, is not very good. In terms of they could win it if they had a decent run of form. But they're incompetent. They are incompetent. It's hilarious. Someone who is not incompetent, though, Alan Lazard, who, by the way, is still playing in Iowa State. I don't know what, like, program he's on. It's a 7-year program. I'm not quite sure.
He's like a 10th-year senior. Still,
he really is. Still playing at Iowa State. He leads the team with 477 yards receiving and 5 touchdowns. A little bit off his production rate from last year. And his production has actually gone down since Clint took over. But I don't know. In my opinion, like, the offense has looked better. And I think it's because Lazard is not the only target.
Yeah, that's probably it. I really haven't watched. I think I've watched, like, maybe a full Iowa State game this season combined.
Yeah, wow.
No. So I can't rattle off any other receivers' names or stuff, but they do have other targets other than Lazard this year.
Yeah. And I think when you look at the Jacob Park to Kyle Kemp kind of transition, Joel Lanning, by the way, who was their quarterback like 2 years ago, is still playing there. He's playing on the defensive side of the ball, which sparked the question that Dana Holgorsen had to answer this week of which quarterback would be the best converted linebacker. I think it's Skylar Howard, personally, because Skylar already wanted to do stupid things like run through people. So I think Skylar Howard would have been the best linebacker that he could have turned.
Yeah. Well, I mean, we would only have Geno, Clint, and Skylar and Will to work with, so yeah, it'd have to be Skylar.
Yeah. I mean, do you want to talk about Ford Childress and Chuck Knoth?
Not really.
All right, so they don't count. I think it's Skylar, but
it's gotta
definitely
be.
Not Clint. Definitely not Clint. And not Geno. Geno's too much. Sorry, Geno. A little bit too much of a diva. Sorry.
That's what you get for, like, talking shit about Geno.
I know, right? Like, snorted, and then all of a sudden, like, snot came into my... Anyway. Don't want to bore you with that. Anyway, so yeah, I mean, look, Alan Lazard still producing, but you've got some other guys who have kicked up in the production. Guys like Akeem Butler and Trevor Ryan, who since Kemp has come on, and Kemp hasn't thrown the ball a whole lot. He's gradually increased his attempts and completion percentage, but he hasn't thrown the ball a whole lot, but they've been smart passes and they've been effective. So, I mean, from an offensive standpoint, they've just been a little bit more efficient, not necessarily prolific, but they've just been doing what they need to do to score points. They're not scoring a whole lot of points, to be fair, which is why, excuse me again, if our offense can get on a roll,
and just be smart with the ball. I think that's kind of the secret here. And I'm not saying we need to be consistent, because we're going to have the, you know, we're going to have a quarter where we're going to score no points, or else going to have a quarter where we're going to score 21. But I don't know if Iowa State can keep up with our scoring. And this is one of the few times in the Big 12 we're going to say that. Does that make sense?
Yeah, I think so. They're like you said, their offense isn't, I guess, high powered like everybody else in the Big 12. They've kind of got the Kansas State offense going.
Yeah. Yeah, they're a ball control offense for sure. I mean, they run the ball a lot. David Montgomery, again, another guy who's somehow still there. But yeah, they're not going to, I mean, they average 32 points a game. That's okay. But really, they scored 38 against Oklahoma, not a great defense. Scored 45 against Kansas, definitely not a great defense. And other than that, they haven't put up a whole lot of points. Even against like Northern Iowa and Iowa, they scored in the 40s, but I mean, okay. I don't know. They've been a little bit hit or miss offensively when it comes to Big 12 games. That's all I'm saying. What does our defense though have to do to stop their offense?
I feel like it's going to have to be like stop their run game. Again, that's the key. Like everything. Like everything is the run game. Stop the run game. Get them off the field, because their quarterback's not good enough to, I guess, complete every pass. He's not good enough to keep the offense going, you know, just in the passing game. They got to rely on the run. So if we can kind of slow down their rushing attack, we have a good chance there.
I think that definitely is kind of the end-all be-all of that. I mean, their passing attack is fine. It's worked when they needed it to, but I don't think they want to rely on that. And if you can stop them on first and second down, and not stop, I mean, like, you know, force them into third and more than five, I think that's where we will have success. And we did a decent job of that against Oklahoma State, okay? Right? Like, we forced a lot of third downs. Granted, they converted, like, everyone. But we did a decent job of keeping Oklahoma State off of schedule. Oklahoma State is just a really good offense that, you know, sometimes that happens. But I want to know also, can we force the turnovers that we forced last game? Because we just talked about it. You know, Iowa State has not fumbled the ball, lost the fumble on offense all year. But our defense seemed to do a decent job of ripping the ball out and putting good contact on the ball carrier. Do you think we can replicate that against Iowa State?
I'm not sure. I don't know how much of that last week was us forcing the turnovers or like just Oklahoma State not taking care of the ball. I mean, that game was very sloppy to start off with. I mean,
yes, by both teams, it was bad.
Like it was so bad that like the national commenters and stuff, like the talking heads, they were all talking about how bad the game was and how, you know, it was like the antithesis of any Big 12 game.
Like yeah, it was actually, it was. Then if we don't turn them over, then is it a matter of just reducing the number of big plays that they run? Or big plays that they get?
Yeah, that'd have to be it. I mean, we can't give up first downs when it's like third and six. Like we have to get them off the field.
Well, and we can't continue to allow 10 and 15 yard runs almost every other run.
Yeah.
I mean, our rush defense has been absolutely horrid. And that's what scares me about this Iowa State offense, is because if they don't want to throw the ball all that much anyway, and we say, well, you don't have to, then that will mean bad things for us personally, I think that. Because even though I think we can outscore them, if they keep the ball for, you know, 10 minutes a quarter, then it doesn't matter if we can outscore them, because we're not going to have the opportunity.
Since we're talking about the run defense and really our rushing attack, Cam Huffman wrote a really cool article. I think I saw it Monday or Tuesday in the Beckley Register Herald, and he broke down like over the past seasons about how when West Virginia has the rushing attack going, our run defense is good too. But like 2014, when our rushing attack was just non-existent, our run defense was terrible too. So I don't know if it kind of just like plays off each other. But here we are again. We're seeing our rushing attack has kind of fallen off, and our run defense has fallen off. Like that's kind of
that's
weird.
An interesting look at it. I guess I never really thought of it as they play off each other like that. I mean, obviously, I'm not saying that like there's causation, but there is a correlation there. I mean, you kind of even saw it. You've seen it all year, though. Our rush defense has been giving up a lot of big yardage plays and a lot of inopportune big yardage plays. Kansas did it, you know, 200 some yards rushing against us by one guy. We had, you know, Baylor figure out a way to run against us. Oklahoma State had 200 yards of rushing against us. If we do that against Iowa State, it won't be good because they're not running the same type of offense that the other teams are running. They're not trying to run the ball. I mean, Oklahoma State ran the ball like 30, 40 times against us, I think, if I remember correctly. That's because they also run a lot of plays. Iowa State isn't necessarily that type of team.
Yeah, Oklahoma State ran like, what, 90-some plays?
Yeah.
Let me see how many Iowa State ran last week. It looks like Iowa State ran about 68. So that's a big difference there.
That is a big difference. And honestly, that was one of the main – I mean, look, that's one of the main reasons why Oklahoma State scored 50 points because they ran 90 plays. A lot of that was because, you know, we had four interceptions and five total turnovers. So, yeah, basically what you need to do, I think, the Iowa State team is make sure that they aren't able to establish a consistent run game. They might get a big play in the run game, but if we can limit that and just make sure they're not getting, you know, 3 to 5 yards every play, I think that'll help us because that'll force them into passing downs and it'll keep them off rhythm.
Yeah, that's what we have to do. We have to force them into passing downs because, like I said, their quarterback isn't on the Mason Rudolph level.
No.
He's not Will Grier. He's not Mason Rudolph. So he's not going to convert those third downs at the same rate as those guys do. So,
well, so I mean, if we can keep them kind of behind the chains and keep them into passing downs, I think that's one way on the defensive side of the ball. That's the way we hurt them. But offensively, we need to self scout a little bit because last week was very not good. And you can tell me we scored 39 points all you want, but remember that 14 of those came from defense and special teams. Offensively was a struggle last week. A lot of that was because Will Grier, he missed open receivers. He threw 4 interceptions. But we have not been able to establish a run game in about 4 weeks now. I don't want to put it all on Justin Crawford because there are 2 other running backs who are just as capable of running the ball. But why has Justin Crawford and our run game not been very productive?
I have no idea. I mean, offensive line doesn't seem to be helping. They're not getting a push on the front there.
No, they're not. They're definitely not.
But it's. I don't know. I don't know if any of it's on Crawford and the other guys, or if it's offensive line, or if it's all on the play calling, which has been not great.
No.
It's like the perfect combination of crap. And it's killing us.
Well, I feel like our run game is bland. It's off tackle, read option, not really a read option, but you know what I mean. It's a read option type play, and it's like, well, you know where they're going. Either they're going to hand the ball off to the running back and he's going there, or not. There's no misdirection. There's no real there's no inventive ways to get the running back a ball in space. Because like when I'm looking at Kennedy McCoy, I'd rather, instead of him running through the line, I'd rather get him a little bit outside and get him going down, you know, side to side and then downhill to build up speed. Because I think he's a lot quicker than what we have at other positions. I mean, Justin Crawford's fine going downhill, but that's still not his forte. I feel like we're doing it.
We're doing it because you have to, right?
That's exactly what it feels like.
Like, it's like, well, Dana, like, Spav's like, well, Dana wants me to run the ball, so I guess I need to run the ball. Okay, here's a run play. Well, that didn't work out, so we're going to pass the ball now. Okay, well, I guess I need to run the ball now. And it's like, well, if you ran it with some conviction and called plays that were more than to just, like, check it off the list, we would have more success.
I mean, I said it last week. He's calling plays like I call plays in Madden. Like, I'm a pass-happy guy in Madden. But I guess in order to keep my running backs happy on the team, I give them a couple
right.
of carries.
And it's shown. I mean, Crawford, his production's gone down. And some people want to say, oh, well, he's not a guy who can, you know, he's not really a guy who takes a big load of running. Well, he hasn't really this year. I'm sorry. He's carried it more, but it's not like he's carried it like a million times. Like, I don't buy that excuse. I don't think he's run the ball like so many times that you're like, wow, he's banged up. Where has he run the ball like a large amount of time, right? He hasn't had more than like 15, 16 carries a game.
Well, I mean, that's why I don't like putting a lot of the blame on Justin Crawford. Like, he may have lost a step. He might be, you know, banged up or whatever. But
sure.
I think a lot of it is on
the
offensive line and the play calling.
Yeah. Our offensive line hasn't been very good at all, and this was one of the areas that we thought was going to be okay coming into the season, because other than, you know, Matt Jones, the center, we had a fairly decently experienced offensive line coming back. Guys who may not have started all that much, but definitely played. And they have, in the past 2-3 weeks, have not been able to protect Will Greer and have not been putting up lanes for the run game.
I wish I had that
unacceptable
stat.
In my opinion.
How many times has Greer been sacked in the last 2 weeks compared to, like, the first 5 games or whatever?
Oh, a lot more. I mean,
he was sacked 8 times in October, 4 times in September. So that's the best I can find.
Say that again?
8 times in October, and it said 4 times in
four
September.
Times. Yeah, that makes sense, because we played Virginia Tech in September. So, you know, I mean, granted, the level of competition has increased greatly, but that clearly says that our offensive line hasn't been able to live up to the competition level. I mean, I know that our offense has put up a lot of points, but it seems, and I know that we've talked about inconsistency being a problem, but there have been some games where our offense was just playing not really good. I feel like Iowa State could be one of those teams that makes us into a not good offense this week.
Yeah, I could probably see that. I mean, they held TCU to 7 points. I mean, TCU's
right.
not like a crazy offense, but they're, you know, better than 7 points a game usually.
Yep. And forced a lot of turnovers, and clearly we showed the ability to turn the ball over.
Yeah, this season is just so weird to me. I don't know what is going on.
Yeah. Well, let's talk about this not fun statistic. David Fields did not catch a touchdown last game, which sucks because he was, you know, doing such a great job.
Well, he only had like 3 catches, right?
Yeah. So this is what I want to talk about. Was that Oklahoma State doing a good job of keeping him out of the game, or was that a byproduct of Will Greer not having a good game?
Gosh, I don't know. Because he had a couple drops. Like, Sills had a couple drops.
Yep.
It might have been a combination of both. Because,
okay.
I mean, we didn't target Sills as much. Seals. No,
Seals. Like that guy kept calling him?
Yeah, we didn't we didn't target him as much as we seemed to.
No.
That could have been on, you know, Oklahoma State's defensive part. But I think a large part of that was just Will had a bad game.
Yes, he did. He really did. I mean, I hate to harp on it, but he really did not have a good game whatsoever. And that's on him. And he's got to do better. And he knows that. And I hope that he's a coach's son, so I trust that he knows how to self-scout and look at film and figure out what he needs to do better. But, I mean, he really did not have a good day. And he can't do that again against Iowa State.
I hate to say it, but if we lose this weekend, like, I'm going to want to, like, just shoot our fan base into the sun because it's going to be insufferable.
Gosh. It's going to be terrible. Yeah. It's going to be bad. Speaking of, I mean, let's just get right down to it then. Wins and losses. I would say it depends on where you look. They're kind of a favorite. We're kind of a favorite. We're in a 2.5-point favorite according to Vegas. And Bill C has us like at a 1.5, 2-point advantage. But the ESPN Football Power Index thing has Iowa State at a 50.8% chance to win. They're 6-2, 7-1 against the spread. So if the spread is 2.5, that's pretty good. That's pretty good for them. West Virginia's 5-3, 4-4 against the spread. Now this is a weird spread because it's only 2.5 points, but and also I would argue that the reason Iowa State was so good against the spread is because they've been picked to lose by a lot in many of their games. But I mean, over under a 60 points, I don't think this will be a high scoring game, but I kind of want it to be, because I think if it gets to, if we score more than 30 points, and I mean, granted, this has been the case since Rich Rod came here, our chances of winning, in my opinion, are basically 95%.
Yeah, that sounds about right. I kind of hate that stat, though.
I do, too, because it's misleading. It's like, well, no shit, if you score more than 30 or 35 points, you're going to win a ball game.
I hate it because that was what, like, that was the go-to argument, like, every game for Coach Stu. Like, oh, if we score 35 points, we'll win. Like, yeah, you usually do.
Yeah, you should. You should. Like, and even in the Big 12, if you score 35 points, 30 to 30, if you score 30 to 40 points in a game, you should win. Iowa State has done a very good job of keeping offenses under 20 points. They average 18.8 points a game. We average giving up 31.6 points per game. But they are not averaging a whole lot of yards on offense. Now, part of this is because they don't run a high, fast-tempo offense. They're not running a whole lot of plays. But I think that is helpful for West Virginia because, and this is going to sound stupid, but you have to gain yards to score touchdowns. So Iowa State is not an offense built to score a lot of points. And if West Virginia can get out front, and it's going to be hard because we haven't done a good job of that in the past couple weeks. Even the Baylor game, it was like, whoa, we're only up like 17-6 at halftime. But if we can get a couple of touchdowns in the first half, I think that gives us a major advantage.
Yeah, we can't come out playing flat again.
I think personally we need 10 points in the first quarter. I don't know if that's going to happen because of the way Iowa State's offense runs, but Iowa State and Kansas have both had games where they've given up a decent amount of points. Iowa State has given up 40 and 30 points a game before. So it's in there. And they haven't had a whole lot of changes defensively. It's their offense that has gone through the changes. Their defense is still – they've been more opportune and better at turning people over. But it's not like they're this – you know, they're not – I think TCU's defense is a much better defense with the ability to actually stop people. It seems like Iowa State stops people via holding onto the ball and turning people over.
Yeah, I think if we can score – I'll even say if we score 17 in the first half, I think we'll be all right.
Okay. Now, this game is in Morgantown. We as Mountaineer fans seem to think that Morgantown is this like super tough place to play. Iowa State fans seem to think that Ames and Jack Trice Stadium is a really tough place to play as well. I would argue that we have not, as a fan base, done a good job of making Morgantown the fortress we pretend it is. We have tickets available, so if you want to go, they're available.
It's not what it used to be.
No, like, it's not. And don't blame the students.
It's not all on the students, no.
All the sections.
Yep. I hate that, you know, instantly the blame gets put on the students, which, yeah, a lot of the students do leave early, but whatever.
Okay, dude. you probably did when you were in school, too. Just because you personally didn't mean other people didn't.
Right, but the students leaving early, to me, is the same thing as the the general public or whatever just coming to the game and setting down and setting on their hands.
Yep.
You might as well be gone too.
Yep. And that's what they've done.
Like, I hate going to games because I like to stand up for the whole game. I like to, you know, get into it. I scream, I yell. I'm very, like, passionate about the game.
Yeah.
I hate being told, sit down, I can't see. Well, you're the game. Stand up.
Yeah. I don't know why people think they should go to a game and sit down.
If you want to sit down, stay at home. Sit on your couch in the comfort of your own house. That way you don't have to yell at people like me that want to stand up and cheer on a team and, you know, try to help. Because crowd noise has an effect. I'm sorry, but it does. Like,
it does. It does. It very much does.
That's probably one of my biggest pet peeves.
If you want to sit down, get one of the touchdown terrace boxes. Or go get a club box seat thing up in the upper levels of the 100 level.
Yeah,
if you want to sit, do that. Sorry. And a hint, when it's cold and raining, sitting is actually worse.
Yes, it is. I know that from experience last year at the Oklahoma game. Because once I got up and, you know, got moving, I warmed up. But my God, sitting there, that was terrible.
Well, I'm very nervous about this game for a couple reasons. One, this is a pseudo rivalry. I mean, we have a rivalry as fans because, like, we want to have the big gas can stay with the smoking musket. Like, personally, we're selfish about that. You know, we have this thing with Wide Right and Natty Light where we have this Riot Bowl trophy that's just basically a tank of gas, our can of gas. We want to keep that. But like you said, we lose this game, our fan base is going to be bonkers, and not in a good way. They are going to be absolutely insane, calling for Dana to be fired.
They already are.
Gibson to be fired. Well, exactly. Exactly. Another chance of rain throughout the day on Saturday. I think it's supposed to be Saturday evening, but, I mean, the game's at 3:30, so probably by the time the game is ending, we're going to have rain. This, again, puts a lot of pressure on our run game and our offensive line. They have to do a good job of opening up holes for our running backs to run through. Because if we can run in Iowa State, we're going to be successful. Because that means Will Grier is going to have hopefully a better day passing the ball.
Yeah, like you said, I have bad vibes about it. I don't even know it's bad vibes. It's just kind of like I don't even want to play it. Kind of.
Yep. Look, here's the thing. Iowa State is 6-2, right? Like, they are the top team in the Big 12, okay? So this is a chance for all you people who say we can't get a big win. I bet if we win this game, they're going to be like, well, it was only Iowa State. So,
oh, yeah.
You know, that's going to be the response from them. But this is a big game. And if West Virginia – this is the other thing. We talked about it last week against Oklahoma State. And I talked about it with Joel Penfield from Cowboys Ride for Free. Both teams, Oklahoma State and West Virginia, were kind of in this position where if they won the game in Morgantown last week, whoever won that game had a really good chance to make a good bowl game and possibly play for the Big 12 title. We don't necessarily have that anymore. It's still out there. We have two losses in the Big 12. Obviously, if we beat Iowa State, they're going to have two losses, and someone's going to have a second loss after the Oklahoma State-Oklahoma game. So it's still out there. But more importantly, in my opinion, you lose this game and a 7-5 season is really tough to get to now.
Yeah, I think you lose this game, 7-5 is going to be your season.
An 8-win. Yeah, I mean, that'll be lucky because you have to beat both Kansas State and Texas, which, I mean, I'm not saying that they're better than us, but I don't know if we can beat both them and then Oklahoma would be our only loss. You know, 8 wins is out there still. And I think if you get 8-4, that's a decent season. And Dana can go, well, yeah, it was a down year, but look what we had to deal with. And here we can go build off of this. So for me, that's what this game matters. It has nothing really to do with the conference as much as it does our own team and the way we can view our team at the end of the season. We win this game, 8-4 is still a possibility. 7-5 is really likely. A bowl game that is not the Heart of Dallas Bowl or the Cactus Bowl is very much on the table.
Yeah, I haven't looked at the projections, but I think a lot of people are projecting us for the Liberty Bowl,
which is fine. That's fine.
Would be really good.
I'll go.
Except for the last time we played in the Liberty Bowl, it sucked, but
it did suck. And I'll go. Memphis is not a city that people think that Memphis is this great city. It's not. Don't kid yourself. But it's cool enough to go for like 2 days. You can get a night on Beale Street. It's great. It's fine. Whatever. I would personally rather play in like the Texas Bowl. Maybe the Alamo Bowl. See, that's the other thing that's still maybe out there for us. I don't think it will be, because I think we'll get a team. As much as all these SEC fans think that the SEC is going to get two teams in the college football playoff, shut up. The loser of Alabama-Georgia will just be in a New Year's Six Bowl. Deal with it. I'm sorry your conference is not as good as you think. Stop. I don't know if we'll make an Alamo Bowl, because I think that'll go to like whoever, the third place team in the conference. I don't think that will be us. But we can make a the Camping World Bowl again. We can make the Texas Bowl down in Houston. These are decent bowl games, and that is where we need to be, right? Everyone wants 10 to 11 wins a season. Y'all, that's fine and handy. That we've never been that program. Don't kid yourself. The Rich Rod and Sue era was a little bit of fool's gold, okay? Even in Rich Rod's, like, decent years. Remember, when Pat White was there, we got 9 wins every season, yes. But, like, 2 of those seasons, we had to get 9 wins in the bowl game. Like, I remember being there for the Gator Bowl victory over Georgia Tech and the victory against North Carolina and the whatever car care bowl thing that was there. Like, don't kid yourself. We're not a perennial 10-win season or 10-win team. I'm sorry. Am I wrong in saying that? Like,
you're not.
I know I'm young, but, like, stop. Don't pretend we're this perennial 10-win team.
It's something, I mean... It's a goal that we could work towards to being a perennial 10-win team.
Absolutely.
But that's not what we are right now. We've had – it's going to sound like we're just making excuses, but, like, we've had up and down years. Like
– Yes.
This year our defense is young again. Like,
yes. I would rather see us be able to sustain a few years of 7 to 9 wins, okay? I would rather that personally, because that shows, hey – we're a decent team. We're competitive. We've got a chance to make the top 25 every year, you know, get a couple nice wins, all that. So for me, I would rather see that. And we can get, hell, we could get to 9 wins if we win on Saturday. It's still out there, you know?
Oh, yeah, it's still there. I mean, we'd have to, win out, I guess.
We'd have to win out. But, I mean, I'm not scared of Oklahoma. I'm scared of going to Norman, but I'm not scared of Oklahoma.
Right.
I mean, I'm not scared of Texas or Kansas State, but
I think
this is the game that we have to win to have a decent season.
Right. I think every game in front of us is winnable. We just have to figure out.
Including this one on Saturday.
Yeah, we have to figure out what happened, what has gone wrong in the last week and a half or whatever, and fix it.
Yeah. It comes down to our offensive line needs to play better. And Will Greer needs to do a better job of taking care of the football. If our offensive line plays better, then I think our run game will be better. I'm not saying Justin Crawford will be back the 100-yard days, but if we can get 250 to 200 yards rushing between the 3 receivers we have and stop running the damn touch pass play with Tevin Bush, because we know it's coming, then we could have an entire podcast about
like,
how
I'm
that
I'm not
play
the only one that sees that, right?
For people
like...
not named – no. Whenever he's basically when he's on the field, you know what's happening. And when he does his motion before the snap across the line of scrimmage, you know what's happening. Once, you need to not give it to him. Just one time.
Like, that is the most telegraphed play ever.
Yes.
That was
one
the thing
time,
about the Tavon, when it worked for Tavon. You didn't know it was coming half the time. Like,
right. Or even if you did, Tavon Austin.
Right. He's in a completely different world from Tevin Bush.
Tevin could be there. I think that of all the people we've had, Tevin looks the most capable to do that.
Yeah, I agree.
Now.
No. I mean, he's a true freshman.
I would like to see one time they fake that play and have everyone going that way and then give a counter play to Crawford or McCoy the opposite way on a handoff. Right?
Maybe it would, you know, change things up where that play is not shut down immediately every time?
Right. Exactly. Exactly.
Like, that drives me insane.
Or have everyone go on that. Yeah. Have everyone go on that way and then have, like, a slant route come up back across the way that everyone's moving. I don't know. Something like that. Like, this is what pisses me off about Spav, and I'm not saying that I'm this offensive genius, but it's like, Spav, we have the ability to give multiple looks. We were talking about this the other day. Where the hell has the diamond formation been this year? Like, I'm not saying that's the best formation to run ever, but if you put Crawford, McCoy, and Wellman in the backfield, like, that's, you don't know what's going to happen. You do, but you don't know really what's going to happen.
Yeah, it's like Dana handed over the playbook, and Spav just, like, ripped out all the pages that had any kind of creative run plays.
Right.
And then just put in blank pages with, like, delayed draws.
Yeah. Yeah. Stop running the delayed draw every time on third down. They figured it out. We're doing it. I'd rather you just hand the ball off on third and long. Anyway, all right. We need to make some predictions here because we're going to talk about this game and this season until we're blue in the face. But, like I said, West Virginia is a favorite by the slimmest of margins. Bill C has us winning, like, 31 to 29 or something weird like that. When I look at the stats, Iowa State, like, if you just average how much they're, like, their points for and our points for and all that kind of stuff, they win 32 to 30. But I kind of think that at home we get a slight advantage. I think that we match up a little bit better against them because I think defensively, if we can stop the run, I think we'll be better because I don't think they're going to have a great day passing against us personally. So I think we can control that issue, but I think this is a 33. I think we cover the spread only because I think it's one of those like 33 to 30 or 33 to 28 games where like Iowa State just comes up short and you don't think of it as like, oh wow, it's going to be over. We escaped that one without thinking, oh wow, we just covered. Like, I think it might be a backdoor cover. Or not really a backdoor cover, but I think it'll be a low key like a cover and the fact that we're not going to look at it as a good victory. Does that make sense?
Yeah, it does. I'm kind of right there with you.
I don't know what you call that because like a backdoor cover is obviously when you score at the end of the game to make it a cover. But I don't think that'll be it. Maybe it will be. Maybe we win on a field goal and it's 33 to 30 and that's a backdoor cover or like. We get a field goal within like 5 minutes to go, and that forces them to have to, you know, drive the field for a touchdown.
Right.
Something like that. But I mean, it could also be again if we can get 14 to 17 points in the first half. I don't see why we can't run away with this thing. You know, I just. But I think it'll be like 33 to 28. I think that's our final score.
Yeah, I'm right there with you. I was thinking like 31-27. So we're kind of right there with Bill C,
yeah.
Which is weird
yeah.
Because usually we're like,
yeah.
Nope.
Well, I think his scoring numbers are actually pretty decent, to be quite honest. When he says this is what I projected as scoring, I think that makes sense. I just don't think Iowa State has – now, granted, they could prove me wrong because, you know, we've been able to give up a lot of points and yards to teams, but I just don't think they're built that way. Also, this is low-key a good prep for next week against Kansas State. We're going to play two very similar teams in a row, teams that are, well, kind of similar. Usually Kansas State plays like this. They haven't this year. But, you know, disciplined teams who make you turn the ball over and control the clock. So we're not going to have a whole lot of chances to score, which is why we have to score every time we get the ball, basically. We can't have seven punts like we did last week or five turnovers. So you say 31-27. I say 33-28. We both have us winning. We both have us basically vomiting and, you know, a paper bag during the game half the time.
yep.
Yeah. This is going to be a not fun one. This is going to be more nerve-wracking than I think any game we've had this season.
It feels like it's going to be one of those games.
Yeah.
And I hate it because every game from here on out is going to be one of those games. Like
Yes, it will. Surprisingly, the only game that I'm not, like, I say this now, but the one game that I'm not like, oh, this is going to be nerve-wracking, it's the Kansas State game, only because I think if we play it right, we can easily win that game. But still, if we don't play it to our potential, that game is going to be a nail-biter. So, I just...
Score early. Score every quarter. Let's do that for a change this game, right? Let's try that. Let's try to score a touchdown in every quarter.
That'd be nice.
Right? Let's try to do that, WVU offense. All right. Any last words, Mike? Any last thoughts about this West Virginia-Iowa State game?
Just whatever happens, like, this is the fans, I guess. Whatever happens, don't lose your mind.
Yeah. Yeah.
Try to be level-headed and objective about this stuff. Like, yes, I get it. We want to win. But if we lose, it's not the end of the world. Like, it's not time for Dana to be fired. You've got to be realistic.
We're not firing Dana, by the way, y'all.
No.
Stop.
No.
We literally just signed him to a contract extension last year. Stop.
Our fans just look for a reason to get rid of a coach, I think.
Yeah. Well, he's not from West Virginia, so we should fire him.
Exactly.
But, hey, look, there are still tickets available. They're not, like, super expensive either. I know everyone was complaining about how the tickets cost a whole lot now, and I'm like, well, sorry? Things increase in cost? I don't know what to tell you.
If anybody wants to, by the way, you can get tickets to Pitt and North Carolina tonight for, like, $2.
Yeah. I still maintain that we should take a group of West Virginia fans, like, during a bye week and go to a Pitt game and just root against the other team.
Like, I'm kind of sad that I never did that when I was in college.
I know.
Like,
I know.
We would drive up to Pittsburgh to go to Pirates games all the time and buy, like, $10 outfield tickets. We should have just drove up and paid, like, $2 for Pitt tickets one time.
Absolutely. Costs more to go to a Pittsburgh soccer game than it does to a Pitt football game. It's funny. Yeah, okay. Let's wrap this up, though. I mean, look, it's West Virginia-Iowa State. It's a Riot Bowl. Probably, since 2014, this is the Riot Bowl that feels the most in question. But it's a 3:30 kick on ESPN2 from Milan Puskar Stadium in Morgantown, West Virginia. If you're going, please arrive early, get well-oiled, and be ready to cheer on the Mountaineers for all 60 minutes. If you're not going, then, you know, I understand. I can't go to every game. But you got to support this team, and that's all I'm going to say about that. We're not a mouthpiece for the university, but by golly, you have to at some point just say, you know what, screw it, I'm supporting the team. 3:30 kick, ESPN2, Iowa State versus West Virginia, the number 15 Cyclones coming to visit the unranked Mountaineers. For Mike Miller, I'm Bart Keeler. Make sure you check out www.smokingmusket.com for daily news, notes, and opinions on WVU sports. Follow us on Twitter at Smoking Musket, like the Smoking Musket on Facebook, and download our podcast on iTunes, Stitcher Radio, and TuneIn Radio. Just search for the Smoking Musket. So, thanks for listening, and as always, goodbye, buddy. I hope you find your dad.